This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Woods, your host, and we're glad to have you today. If you stuck with us through the break, glad to have you back. If you're just joining us, we're talking today with Tyler Wick Stevenson, the author of the book, The World Is Not Ours to Save. Tyler involves himself in the anti-nuclear war cause, but he has discerned, he's looked at it closely, and he's realized that real involvement in this is an outgrowth of what it means to be a faithful believer. And of course, we at Peace Talk are concerned about how do we be faithful believers wherever it is that we are living and whatever we're involved in. So let's pick up the conversation right there, Tyler. And to do that, I want to call your attention to something that you said right in the early part of your book. And I read, you say, we live on top of a world of unmendable cracks, and the insoluble nature of the world means that the question posed to us is not, how do we fix this, but how can we live out the love of God in the midst of such brokenness? Pick it up right there. What does it mean to be faithful in the world in which you're living?
Well, you put your finger on really the core concern of the book. And this question of faithfulness, I mean, let me take it back to a way that we talk in churches and a language that I think will be recognizable to anybody who spends any time around a church. If you're in a church for any period of time, especially if you're in a youth group environment, you will hear a desire to change the world. I feel like this is all throughout the way Christians talk. And I think, you know, to some extent, that's a reasonable thing to be concerned about. But when you look at it a little closer, I think you have to start asking yourself some questions about that, because don't all of us change the world simply by living in it? You know, I change the world by being active or inactive. And the world as we know it is made up and is changed and is perpetually changing. By the way, all of us, believer and unbeliever, good and bad, live our lives. What I think people mean when they talk about wanting to change the world is about wanting to change the conditions of the world, wanting to change the world in a more fundamental way as to its structures. And so I think there's this embedded hope in the possibilities of social engineering, of political engineering, of economic engineering. It's not entirely misplaced. I mean, some profound goods have come out of social movements. But I think overall that assumes that we have far more power and have far more control over our ability to sort of tinker with the affairs of history and direct it toward a place that we think is good than we actually do. If you look at the teachings of the New Testament, if you read the Gospels, if you read the letters of Paul, the earliest Christian writings, where the apostle is writing to these communities that he has planted, these churches he's planted throughout the Mediterranean, nowhere does Paul say, your job is to change the conditions in which you live. Nowhere does Paul say, your job is to fix the evils of the Roman Empire, and it certainly had its evils. Paul says, your job is to faithfully live out the gospel that's been entrusted to you. And what that faithfulness looks like in a nutshell is that you live your life moving more and more toward 100% love. That love is exhaustively the thing that makes you who you are. So what I think is the danger when we bring this back to a modern context, we can get passionate about causes. We can get passionate about, you know, fixing this or that situation, and this can be a way where we try to exercise control over the world. But the problem is none of us is indispensable. You know, any of us could get hit by a bus walking out on the street. Any of us could have a heart attack. Any of us could get sick, and the world would continue on without us. And so this says to me, this fundamental fact that we are like the grass of the field, this fundamental fact about being a human being says to me that our job is not to be fundamentally to be problem solvers. Well, that's not to say if we can solve a problem, let's do it. But that's not fundamentally what our job is. Our job is to love and to love right. And so what I'm urging people to do in the book is to consider who God has called them to be and the way that they can live out their lives more and more as an expression of love, the love that has been given to them and that the love that they can then extend to the world.
You know, in our particular fellowship that I'm a part of, we're studying through the book of Hebrews, and we've got into Hebrews chapter 11.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really struck me as I moved towards the end of your book is it began to gel, I think, a whole lot better to me what you were talking about, is that when you see the world the way God sees it, the way that God is taking the world, and you try to bring the future that God has already told us we're going to enjoy, and you try to bring it into your world today.
That's right.
You're seeing the world as God sees it, and that's then he sees it lovingly and bringing himself into it, bringing his kingdom into it, and that's what we do.
Yeah, you know, there's really the hinge of the book. It's a two-part book. And the hinge of the book is based on this verse from Hebrews, which talks about the Old Testament saints and how they welcomed the promises of God from a distance. So they didn't get to see the promised Messiah, but they welcomed that promise from a distance. And I think that so eloquently puts the way we as Christians who need to regard the kingdom of God, that we welcome that vision of peace and joy and love from a distance. And this is where I want to split the difference between being an idealist and a realist. I think too often people who are, you know, sort of protect themselves by saying, "Oh, I'm a realist. I see the world as it is." Well, as Christians, we're not really allowed to do that. We have to see the world as it is, but that's in the foreground, and the background is where God is taking it. And we live in orientation to that background. We live oriented toward that horizon, and a lot of times that's what's going to draw us into conflict with the world. You know, you talked about how among the folks that you know, and certainly among the folks that I know, this working on nuclear weapons wouldn't necessarily be what the first thing that they would think a Christian would do. And doesn't it seem counterintuitive, you know, trying to get rid of nuclear weapons and at the same time saying the world is not ours to save? But that's actually at the core of the work for me, just as an example, that I couldn't be working on nuclear disarmament if I thought that work was mine to bring about. There's no way I can do that. But at the same time, I have to think, you know, if the government announced tomorrow that it had developed a new bomb, and the only thing that this bomb did would be that it would kill every child in the womb within a two-mile radius of the explosion, and that it would only be used under the worst circumstances to demoralize and take the heart out of the enemy. And they called it the abortion bomb. Is there anything I could do but stand up and say, that's an abomination? No government can responsibly deploy that. And yet we have these weapon systems that do that and worse. They kill the unborn children. They kill the mothers. They kill old, rich, poor, young. They kill everybody. And so for me, it's not about, you know, can I get rid of these things? It's more about, I see the situation. I have no idea what's within my power. I have no idea how many days God will give me. And yet this is what love looks like for me. And so the book ends with a call to people to find, you know, where has God placed them that they can then pour themselves out. And that's not everybody's going to be in my boat, but wherever you are, to be true to what God has called you to do.
And I saw that you talked a lot about a couple of things. One, about vocation, that we all spend our time doing something. If we could get a vision of what God would do in the world that we live in, and then see how we could accomplish whatever we could in that world, understanding that we are limited people. And you actually find contentment in that, don't you?
Well, I do. I mean, I think that part and parcel of vocation is realizing that if I'm called to this, I'm not called to everything else. I mean, we get this in our baptism. If you're called to Jesus as Lord, you are called to no other lords. You get this in marriage. If you are called to your spouse, you are not called to everybody else. And so it's about acknowledging our limitations and finding a freedom in that limitation. You know, one of the things that I think is dangerous about a cause-driven Christianity is that it can make people who are living faithful Christian lives feel like they're less than. But to anybody who's raising a family, and, you know, working their job, they're trying to be salt and light wherever they are. they're being exactly who they're supposed to be. Now, that's not to say that we shouldn't be out there. I'm not trying to let people off the hook. But what I want to say is that it is not, you know, we can, at our peril, do we say that Christianity is about supporting cause X, Y, or Z, when what we really know is that Christianity, following Jesus, is about being a loving and faithful member of the body of Christ. And whatever that looks like, and there's no way any author, there's no way anyone can answer that for every person, because that is only, that's between them and God.
I was struck by remembering in the life of Jesus, and that's what your book calls us to look at God, is that Jesus, at the end of his life, just says to the Father, I have gathered who you gave me. I have not lost a one. But up to that time, he had said, I teach what you give me to teach. I go where you want me to go. Mm-hmm. I just do what you want me to do. That Jesus understood the very limitations of what his ministry was all about. And his job, as this, even the Son of God, was to simply be faithful within the limitations which God put on him, to faithfully do what the Father said for him to do. And that's what you're talking about as good discipleship, right?
Yeah, that's really well put. I don't have anything to add to that. That's spot on.
Well, be pastoral for just a second. I think we have about 2 minutes left, okay? And talk to the people that are listening to us today who maybe they're either looking for a cause or feeling like they have to have one, or skeptical that their life is really meaningful. All they do is get up in the morning, they go to work, they get a check, they come home, and their life is so very routine. As a pastor, speak to them. What would you say to them from the context of your experience?
Well, if you are in that boat, if you are getting up in the morning and you're taking care of your family as best as you can, and you're going to work and you're doing your best with that, or you're making a home, or then know that you're in good company, because you are living a life that is very similar to the lives of all the saints throughout history. This is how the people of God live. So in a sense, there's find a freedom in that this is just fine, and that it, despite what you know, some of the more inflated rhetoric might make it seem like, none of us is supposed to go out there and fix the world so that there's no more problems for the next generation. It's not possible. That's not a task that's given to us. It's not a power that's given to us. But at the same time, let's ask ourselves, where are we too comfortable? Where are we embracing wealth or privilege a little too much? And where could we get out of that comfort zone? Where is our comfort keeping us from loving to the nth degree? And then find that spot and pour yourself out in it.
Thank you. Our guest today has been Tyler Wick Stevenson, the author of the book, The World Is Not Ours to Save. And what he's done is he's called us to discipleship, to discovering what the love of God is, and seeing how the love of God can be given effect wherever we find ourselves in a very broken world. Thank you, Tyler, for being our guest today. We trust that if you've listened to Peace Talk, you have found exactly what Peace Talk is all about, because Peace Talk is the place where you find hope, get help, and discover peace.
Opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.